timed is such an interesting expression to me because of that word ill, it implies that it is a negative thing. But my guest today on Creativity Uncovered proves that even though sometimes the timing can be off a little bit, you still can create a really positive experience and outcome. Hi, my name is Abby Gatling, and this is Creativity Uncovered. This is a podcast where I try and uncover how everyday people find inspiration, get inventive, and open their imagination. Basically, I want to know how people find creative solutions and then how they use those at home, at work, at play, and everything in between. And my goal for the podcast is that by the end of it, you will be armed with a whole suite of tried and tested ways to summon creativity the next time that you need it. So today I'm very excited to be speaking with Lauren Spangler, who is a painter and a musician, a writer, creativity coach, and a mum. So welcome, Lauren.
It's a treat to be here, Abby. Thank you for having me.
Ah, my pleasure. I'm really interested and excited about this chat because we spoke a couple of weeks ago and I was like, oh, I have so many more questions. I have to wait for the podcast. And now it's my opportunity.
Here we are. It's great.
Yeah. Because I think this is a really fantastic topic for the podcast because we have a couple of different types of people who listen to the podcast. It's people who are already working in the creative space and they want tips and tricks to be able to push through creative blocks and stay creatively motivated. But then the second type is people who maybe feel like they're not creative or they don't have the ability to be creative. And we want to try and unlock these new ways of tapping into creativity. And I feel like you are going to help with both of these different audience types. So I'm really keen to jump in. So Lauren, when you reached out, I was super, super intrigued by your story because for you, creativity struck at a pretty inconvenient time, would you say?
Yeah, well, re-struck maybe. I think it is something I loved for a long time and fell out of, and then it sort of popped back up in an unexpected moment, for sure.
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk about that. So restruck. So you were working or playing in a creative space prior, and then perhaps it dropped. Your creativity dropped off. Like, what happened there?
Yeah. So I've been. I guess when I was little, I didn't think of it as creativity. I just thought of it as play. And my favorite ways to play were to draw or to write or to make music. And so whenever I had a spare scrap of time, I was usually at the piano or making a story or painting something. And I was really lucky to grow up in a home where those things were embraced and encouraged. And so all through my childhood, I had lessons. I had wonderful teachers. I went to school for music. I trained as a composer and a performer. And after college, I was a professional musician for about a year. And then for a variety of reasons, which I'd be glad to go into if you want, but I wound up stopping completely and building a completely separate career as a strategist in an entirely different industry. And I spent about 7 years in what I thought was just a new chapter of life. And what I realized now was actually sort of a deep creative burnout. And I didn't expect it to ever end. I thought that creativity and music and art and trying to do these things with a high degree of intention was just something for the earlier phase of my life. I thought that was over. And so when I was in my late 20s and I had a career and I had kids and I had a mortgage and I was living a very different life from the life of an artist that I'd initially set out to live, I suddenly started having this new surge of creative desire and these projects that popped up that I wanted to work on. And I started painting in the middle of the night and I started doing all these really unexpected creative explorations that reminded me that I really wanted to go back into that creative space. But it sure didn't fit the new plan at all. And so then I was sort of in this moment where I wasn't wanting to sacrifice all the new roles and priorities I had, but I wanted to sort of readopt this creative practice and creative identity that was still important to me.
Wow. There is so much there that I want to ask you about. So much. Okay, so you were in this, you know, creative career path, and you veered away from that because of burnout. So does that mean that you were just putting out too much and not putting enough back in? Or like, what do you think caused that burnout?
I think that was a big piece of it. Yeah, I think there was an imbalance in the way I was creating and the way I was enjoying what I created. And the play had sort of gotten sapped out of it for me, and it turned into something totally different than what it had been and what I had really fallen in love with about being creative. And now I look at it as a relationship with creativity, that we all have this relationship with our creativity that is separate from the products of our creativity and is separate from the perhaps the reception of our creativity or the reviews we get on our creativity. The relationship that we experience in our creative practice is its own aspect that we have to tend carefully, just like you would any relationship that's important to you, right? There are certain ways you would spend time in an important relationship. You'd be sure to have fun in an important relationship. There are ways you would think about and talk about and define yourself in regard to an important relationship. And looking back now, I realize I was not doing that with my creativity when I first started as a professional. And so, yeah, what happened is I actually hit this moment where I felt like there was this fork in the road where I could either continue trying to make it in the creative world, or I could build a life of financial stability and sort of build the type of childhood for my children that I had had, which is one where my parents were home with me. My mom tucked us into bed at night and read us a story. And at some point I had this sort of crisis and I realized I'm not going to be able to do that with my kids because I, you know, if I'm on a stage somewhere or on a tour somewhere or whatever, I'm not going to be there for all those precious little moments. And also where I was in my career, where I was in the industry, I wasn't able to create the sense of stability that I knew I wanted on some level. And so music and art just wasn't affording me what I thought I wanted to build and experience. And so at that moment, because creativity was no longer fun and because it wasn't bringing me the lifestyle that I was envisioning for my future, I decided to step away from it. And I was happy with that decision for quite a long time until I realized that those creative dreams and visions and desires didn't go anywhere. They just sort of sat in the background waiting to be listened to.
Yeah. Wow. That is so interesting. And it's complex, our relationship with creativity, because as you said, it is a relationship. I love the fact that you sort of likened it to perhaps like a romantic relationship, but whereas deeply, deeply personal. And when you're constantly having to do it for other people and, you know, produce things at the end rather than just play in the process, then it can get out of skew like really quickly. But that's really interesting. I also think a couple of people on the podcast have mentioned the idea of seasons as a relationship to your creativity, where, you know, that was a season where it was creativity was at the forefront, and then it's okay for take that step back. But eventually, as all seasons keep progressing forward, you know, you're going to somehow get back there again. Yeah. So when you had this, you know, the career as the strategist, did you think about creativity at all? Or were you just like, I just need a break from that? It's not my focus at the moment.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely still made things. I still enjoyed playing at the piano to decompress, or, you know, drawing something for fun with my kids. But I think I had relegated it to this different category where I had sort of said, okay, I'm not an artist though, or I'm not a musician though. This is just a hobby. This is just a small thing. It's all very low stakes. Like, I don't want much out of this. And I think that was a way to cope with the burnout and release the pressure and just allow it to be this fun thing. And probably at the time, that was the right medicine, because it allowed me to just get back into this easeful, kind of playful relationship with what I was making. And I would say I created much less often you know, I think when I was young, I would play piano and make songs like daily. It was something that I just couldn't stay away from. And I think during my burnout, it was something that I would maybe once a month, I would go sit down and try to make something and wind up usually getting a little frustrated or, you know, just deciding to cut it short. And so it was a different type of practice and it didn't feel as quite as fulfilling or wholehearted, but it was still there sort of in drip drop levels throughout those years.
Yeah. Wow. It's interesting what you just said before about naming yourself as an artist or as a musician. It's like an artist, capital A, musician, capital A, yeah. M, you know, like your title. Well, is that how you can make that separation that I just do music versus I'm a musician? That was able, that gave you that separation, did it?
Yeah, I think at the time I needed some way to divorce my sense of success as a person from whatever success or failure I was perceiving with my art. And in art school or in music school, I think it's really easy to get those two things wrapped around each other so tightly, where if you're performing well or if the piece turns out nicely or whatever, like you are fulfilling your role and you're a good capital A artist or capital M musician. And it puts a lot of pressure on the outcome. I don't think that's a bad thing because I think it's important to hold ourselves to a high standard and to strive for creating amazing things. And the point of studying and training is to develop the techniques to do that. And there has to be some critical feedback, right? I don't think it's a bad thing, but I do think it's a powerful thing in terms of how it shapes and shift the way you perceive yourself in relation to your artwork. And so for me, music and art became this title, this noun that I had to like live up to. And I think through recovering through burnout and reintegrating creativity in a different way and rebuilding the relationship, I turned it back into a verb of like, I'm going to paint. I'm going to make a song. I'm going to sing for a while instead of I'm going to go be a singer. It's just a totally different energy for me and made it a lot more enjoyable and let me be back in it instead of, in the experience of doing it instead of analyzing the experience of doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. Oh, so interesting that it's a mindset shift for you to change that, and that's how you've changed your relationship with creativity. So you were ticking along in this career in a non-creative, I'm using air quotes for anyone who's listening audio, non-creative career, doing these little bits and pieces, but you actually had a moment when you had a newborn baby and you felt like you were restruck with your creativity. Tell me what that moment was and how that creativity was different to the little bits and pieces you were doing throughout that time.
Yeah, I had just given birth to my second son and he was tiny, teeny tiny. And we were still in the waking up in the middle of the night phase. So we would wake up and nurse like multiple times a night and he would fall straight back to sleep. And I would sit there awake in bed with nothing to do, dark house, everyone's sleeping, everything's quiet. And the first thing that would pop to mind was like, I really want to go draw something. And for a while I thought, this is probably just delirium. I'm probably slow sleep deprived, but I don't recognize that this is a ridiculous time to go get out like paints or pencils. Like this is not the moment. Eventually I just gave into it. And I started keeping a pad next to my bed and a pen. And so when he would go back to sleep and I would stay awake, I would just sort of start drawing and start sketching things. And I actually started sketching these mama and baby animals in these little tender moments together. And I would start to sketch moments that I had experienced with my son that day. These little precious newborn times that I didn't want to lose the memory of, I would start to capture in these sketches. And or moments with my toddler. I also had a two-year-old at the time also running around. And so he was also full of these really funny, fun, enjoyable, and also sometimes crazy and difficult and exhausting moments. And in the ups and downs of all of that, And also this upside downness of just being in the throes of suddenly being a mom of two. I think one way that I made sense of that was to capture the moments that I really wanted to remember in these little sketches of these animals. And so over a few months, I created this collection that I just love, because now I look at it and it takes me right back to those little moments, you know, 3 years ago when I was snuggling my little newborn or chasing my toddler around the house. And in that practice, in this sort of like tidal wave of all these ideas and all these drawings coming out, I realized that I was having so much fun and that I wanted to paint and that I wanted to share this work with people and that I wanted to maybe put the artist hat back on for a minute and think about whether these paintings would mean anything to anyone else. And would it help remind some other mom of a tender moment she was enjoying with her little ones? And so I started sharing them and connecting with people over the art. And it just sort of reignited this whole creative identity and practice and desire and vision that had been dormant for a long time, but felt really, really good to get back into. But not the moment I would have chosen. If I could have picked a moment to suddenly learn how to paint again and learn how to run an art business and all of that, probably would have timed it differently, but it turned out well in the end.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's, you know, that saying, if you want something done, ask a busy person. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that basically means the more you do, the more you can do. And so you already have so much on your plate and probably very little personal time, but you're like, I'm just going to squeeze this in and make it work. But what struck me when you're talking there was that your creative expression at that time was just so born from this emotional space where you are trying to remember these tender moments and how you're feeling at that point in time. And I think that's really important for creativity, is that it is like this deeply, deeply personal thing.
Yeah.
Does that feel vulnerable doing things? I know you're doing beautiful drawings of animals and things like that, but does it still feel kind of vulnerable because it's such an emotional thing?
It did. Yeah. I think there was also a piece there where I was sense making, you know, this whole experience of becoming a mom or becoming a mother of two, or like it's this huge seismic shift and it's deeply disorienting. It's like, what do you anchor down into when everything in your life is sort of uprooted and upended? And so I think it was also a way for me to sort of choose what to focus on and what I really wanted to take out of that really wild, crazy season. And it is vulnerable. It was personal, and it was, although it felt less personal because I was drawing, like, you know, pandas instead of myself, somehow that made it feel a little bit less revealing. But I think there was also a piece there where I was struggling with some postpartum anxiety. I'd had a difficult experience with my first birth, and my second birth brought a lot of that up. And I think to focus on these moments of connection with my baby or play with my children helped just bring me back to center a little bit and say, you know, whatever I'm afraid of in this moment or whatever this season is bringing up for me and the fears that I'm facing as a mom, I can still choose to focus on the things that are going right and these moments of bonding that I'm having. And I think at some point there was this subconscious choice that, like, that's what I wanted to carry out, was the bonding. I didn't want to remember all of the strife and fear and anxiety and all of that, which I think most new parents experience. That was all there, and that was a valid and important piece of that time. But the part that I really wanted to focus on and keep for myself was these tender little moments that I knew were fleeting. So yeah, it is a really vulnerable collection of work. But it really resonated with people. And I found that a lot of them, it brought them back to some of these tender moments in their families. And that was really rewarding for me.
Oh, that's lovely. It sounds like it was kind of a cathartic experience for you as well.
And definitely.
From speaking with, you know, friends and family who've been new parents, like, they're, it can really shake your sense of self and your sense of like your identity. And it's interesting to me that that was sort of happening to you, but you were refining or redefining your identity back as becoming an artist again during that time. That's just really interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I think that's been huge in what's happened in the 3 years since that sort of unexpected creative boom happened. I think continuing to prioritize it has been an act of self-care and self-love to say, yes, I'm a mom. Yes, I'm a strategist. Yes, I'm a coach. And I'm also going to go paint some stuff right now. I'm going to go write a song. I'm going to go record some music. I think allowing that identity to flourish has been a huge help in just rebalancing me in motherhood, but rebalancing our whole family. I think it's great for my kids to get to see me go have fun making something and get to share it with them afterward. And even if that means they can't knock on mom's studio door for 45 minutes because she's got an idea she's working on and so they're going to go play with dad for a while, like even if it makes me unavailable to them for a slice of time, I think it's worthwhile for them to see their parents prioritizing and enjoying these things that are a different part of their identity outside of parenthood.
Yes, I agree. And them seeing you model like this almost self-care, you know, prioritizing your fun and your happiness is really important because so many of our parents never did that because there was this real sense of duty and people didn't have hobbies. So I think it's really great that you're doing that. So what has the impact been since then? You said that you've started to do some of this work and you're selling it to other people. Are you working in creativity in the full time or are you?
It's a mix. I definitely enjoy, I haven't recorded music in a long time. That's one thing I haven't done professionally in a while. Although I am having fun writing it more now than I have in a long time. I have some exciting projects that I'm looking forward to releasing sometime. Eventually, non-committal answer here. No timeline has been recorded on this podcast. but paintings, I love. So I've been selling artwork for a few years now, about 2.5 years. And at this point, all of my sales are direct to collector online. I connect with most of my collectors on Instagram. It's a really fun operation, actually, because now my oldest son is old enough to participate in that. So he'll sometimes help me pack orders or he'll help me run them down to the post office. And it's been really neat to have his help and him get to see the inside of kind of a small art business and how that's run. So it's a blast. And then creativity coaching has also joined the mix as I sort of developed the framework in my own life about how to reintegrate creativity and how to balance it with all the other things that I was prioritizing as a mom and as a, you know, having a career, et cetera, et cetera. I started to help other people do that as well. And so now that's a huge piece of my focus and something I am really passionate about and love to do. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say like that, the creative coaching, that's so interesting. So you've taken your experience of this and you're translating it to help others do the same. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I find that there are a lot of people who are deeply skilled and passionate and have this creative vision or this project that they want to bring into being, but they feel like they're trapped and they can't do it because they feel like they don't have the time or the space or, you know, for many of us, we've built our lives around a certain degree of financial stability that we're not willing to sacrifice to just drop everything and go be an artist. Not willing or not able. And so a lot of the people that I work with want help bridging the gap between this creative work that they know they want to do, that they feel called to do, and the tangible daily actions that they can actually take to do that. And how that creative work can fit in with all these other hats that they wear. I love sitting down with people and taking an inventory of what they want to do with their creativity, what they want to experience with it, what creative fulfillment would look like to them, and then talk about how they can do that now in their real life. And there's a framework, there's a process we walk through to do that and help them bring it in a very real and fulfilling way. And that's the work that really lights me up right now, because it's just so fun to watch this fulfilled experience be contagious and watch other people start to do it too. It's really rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine. I you know, you've done the hard work of doing it yourself in your life, and now you're helping other people realize that too. That must be a fantastic feeling.
It's great. It's really fun. And one of the most fun pieces is that I work with a range of people. So I talk with painters and illustrators and musicians and writers. And the other day I got to learn a ton about metalworking because I was working with a jeweler. And I don't know the first thing about jewelry making, but you know, we were talking through her process and what it would take for her to actually create this brand new collection that she has had on her mind for a long time. And so she was talking to me about the mechanics of like the tools and equipment she needed to do it and how that was or wasn't compatible with her newborn baby that she was also now, mother to. And as we were talking through all of that, I got to learn a tremendous amount about what it's like to be a jeweler. So that's a really fun part of the gig as well, learning about all these different crafts.
I bet. And it's cool that it's a process that translates to all these different mediums. Like I guess it's the same mechanics of it all. It doesn't matter what sense part of creativity you apply it to.
Yeah, because I like to take it back to the root of the relationship a person has with their creativity. And that can apply in all sorts of different domains. So there are also people who are sort of multidisciplinary, like myself, who might be an author and an illustrator or whatever. And I find that there are some truths and some principles that can help most people, no matter what their actual creative practice or discipline looks like.
So you've reintroduced creativity into your life. You're helping other people get it back into their lives. Are you feeling creatively fulfilled now, or do you still have a creative itch that you are looking to scratch at some point?
Ooh, well, I have projects I'm excited to work on, and I always have more projects than I have time in the day to work on. But no, I do feel extremely fulfilled, because I think that's the piece of it I have to guard really carefully, especially the more projects I get to start and the more clients I get to work with. I feel like it's more and more important for me to protect the time to just have that free creative space. I always recommend that people carve out 60 minutes a day, which sounds like a lot before you do it, but it's not that much really. 60 minutes a day where they have absolutely no expectations for what they're going to produce, where they just get to go have fun. They just get to go play. They don't have any interruptions. And they get to go explore and do whatever it is that's going to bring them fulfillment on that given day and that given moment. And I find that when I maintain that practice, I call it my golden hour. That's what I call it, just because it's sort of this like glowing, precious part of my day. But when I uphold that golden hour and I uphold that rhythm, it gives me a lot of opportunity to do whatever is going to bring me fulfillment in that moment. And it hasn't failed me yet. It's been a really healthy thing for me over the past few years.
Yes, that's a great tip. And yeah, it does sound like 60 minutes, an hour, that sounds like a lot of time, but you know, we probably spend way more of that just doom scrolling on our phones or doing something else.
For sure.
That's not going to make us feel as good.
Yeah, you know, I really benefited from swapping out the term "I don't have time" with the phrase "it's not a priority." Because when I would tell myself, "Oh, you know, I don't have time to go draw," if I would say it's not a priority to go draw, then sometimes that's true. Like there are days where, yeah, it's not a priority to go draw. But when you make that swap of phrases, it gets you really clear on where you're making priority calls and blaming it on bandwidth, you know, I don't have time to go play Legos with my kid right now. Well, it's not a priority to go play Legos with my kid. I don't have time to go reach out to that prospective, you know, collector of my work. Well, no, it's not a priority. Or if it is a priority, maybe there's something else there that's keeping you from doing it. So yeah, it's there is time there. It just has to become an intentional practice around how we spend that time.
That swap of language is really powerful, because if you say, because it, if you say it's not a priority to do that, that either hits you in the gut being like, oh my gosh, did I just say that? Or you go, actually, no, you're right, it's not a priority. If it comes out and it feels wrong, then you've made the wrong decision.
It gives you your own gut check. As soon as you say it, you know whether that's true or not, right?
Yeah.
And so as soon as I started asking myself what the priorities really were, then, you know, it becomes pretty clear how you can build your day around what your priorities truly are. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. Such an interesting story and lots of great tips and takeaways there. Thank you so much for joining me, Lauren. That was a really cool chat.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
And what I'll do is I'll pop in the show notes the link to your website. There is some beautiful artwork on there. Your drawings are just fantastic. And there's also the information about your creative coaching and all the other beautiful things that you're doing. But I also want to say thank you to everyone who's tuned into Creativity Uncovered today. If you enjoyed this episode, please, wherever you're listening now or watching now, jump on, give us a rating or a review, because this helps other people find this podcast and share our message with more people. And as always, if this episode has creatively inspired you, do get in touch. I love to hear what it inspires you to do. And then I hope that it helps you some in creativity the next time that you need it. Thanks and take care. If you've made it this far, a huge thank you for your support and tuning into today's episode. Creativity Uncovered has been lovingly recorded on the land of the Kabi Kabi people, and we pay our respect to elders past, present, and emerging. This podcast has been produced by my amazing team here at Crisp Communications, and the music you just heard was composed by James Gatling. If you liked this episode, please do share it around and help us on our mission to unlock more creativity in this world. You can also hit subscribe so you don't miss out on any new episode releases.